Welcome to this special Italian wine podcast broadcast. This episode is a recording off Clubhouse, the popular drop-in audio chat. This Clubhouse session was taken from the Wine Business Club and Italian Wine Club. Listen in as wine lovers and experts alike engage in some great conversation on a range of topics in wine. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through ItalianWinePodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. And remember to subscribe and rate our show wherever you tune in.
Hello, everybody. How are you guys? Just running back from a winery trip. Hey, ciao Giovanni, ciao Arno.
Hello, Stevie.
Hi, you guys. So my name's Stevie Kim, and welcome to our weekly. Giovanni, I'm just going to mute you until you can unmute yourself later. My name's Stevie Kim, and welcome to our weekly room dedicated to Italian wines. And this is the Italian Wine Club. Thank you for joining us today. Today we'll be talking to Giovanni Bertani and Arno Ursel, both live. They're together, actually, both live from Burgundy. Just as a quick reminder, as you may already know, Italian Wine Club is where we invite various wine producers and advocates from the Italian wine community. The rooms that I personally host are mostly educational, as you know, in nature, but other members have been organizing all sorts of rooms. Italian Wine Club is now up to 1,700 members and followers, I think, as of recent, I think. And I'm pretty excited because as of last week, I don't know if you know, now when you schedule a room, you can share the link directly with even non-members as well through your social media channels. This means that even if you're not yet on Clubhouse, they'll be able to skip the wait list and automatically join your club. In addition, if you go to the club page, you can now see upcoming calls directly listed right at the top of the club page. I mean, I know there has been a bit of a drop in the Clubhouse attendance lately because I think mostly a lot of you are vaccinated, especially stateside, and there's such nice weather outside. So it's, but now they're doing a, I think there's a beta for Androids, which is pretty exciting. So hopefully it will open the floodgates as well. So now, no need to invite only members. It can now be open to all. That is still only limited to iPhone only as of today, but hopefully soon to everybody. And so that we can spread the gospel about Italian wine more readily. We have, as you know, another club called Wine Business. So check that out as well. For those of you who've already been to my rooms in the past, you know that I like to run it until the 1 hour mark. So please raise your hand after we've had the first round of discussion with the panelists. Then I will bring you up onto the stage for your questions or comments. So let's start with Giovanni. Ciao, Giovanni. Now it's time to unmute. Great.
Hello, Stevie. How are you?
Ciao, Giovanni. So let me just give you a little bit about who Giovanni Bertani is. He's currently the one of the principals of Tenuta Santa Maria alla Pieve. It's actually very, very close to Verona. And of course, Bertani carries a very it's heavy name, so he'll explain a bit later about that. And he has, I think, one of the only chateaus in Verona, so I hope you can go visit him very, very soon. I met actually Giovanni way back when he was working for an ad agencies, and he was one of my graphics for one of the projects that I was working on. So I've known Giovanni for a very, very long time. Hi, Giovanni. How was your ride to Burgundy?
Actually, I arrived an hour ago in Bern, so the very, very heart of Burgundy, I would say. And here we go. We have in front of me Monsieur Arnaud, that is going to introduce himself later on. It's fantastic to be here again.
Okay, yeah, lucky you, lucky dog. Listen, Giovanni, so, you know, of course, I want to, you know, address one thing. Your father passed, of course, recently, and he was one of the biggest influencer of wine history in Verona. And it was a very sad moment for all of us. Heavy supporter also have been, he's been a great supporter of course, all of the Italian wine ambassadors whenever they were nearby. So we miss him. And how is that going for your family and your mom and everything?
So I think we realize how important the family behind the winery. So he's basically taking over what actually has been his experience, his experimentation, his philosophy, his vision of wine. And you realize how it's important as a family, because actually the family is the one actually that brings continuity to a project, to a wine, to a philosophy. So for us, it's basically carrying over what we've been doing for generations. And we unfortunately suddenly realize how actually it is important, and it is important for us, and was important also for my father.
Listen, Giovanni, can you do us a favor and explain a little bit about the Bertani family and the wine history, as well as, you know, there's the confusion with Bertani Domain, because you are now a owner of another winery established since, I can't remember when. When did you start Tenuta Santa Maria?
Tenuta Santa Maria actually has been in the family, the property, at least since the 1800s, so it's a long time in the family. But as a separate operation, started in 1991, and we separated from the other Bertani winery in 2012. So what basically happened is that One of the brothers of my father died, and then there was some issues with the family. So we decided back in 2012 to separate the original Bertani winery in two. One actually has been, the brand was sold by my cousins to this pharmaceutical company called Angelini, while the historic estate in Valpolicella was actually kept by our side of the family, and is where we are based. So Tenuta Santa Maria is today based in the original winery, in the original chateau, where actually our Amarone was born. Our first vintages of Amarone were born in the 1950s.
Okay, great, because there is some confusion, and I appreciate that clarification. So, Giovanni, today, you know, of course, it's a little bit of, you know, in honor of your dad as well.
Thank you.
I've been wanting to organize this room with also Arno, and we'll get to him in a little bit. So can you, first of all, can you just tell us what we're going to be talking about, which is Acinatico? Right, from 1928. It's a lovely story, and I don't think many people are aware of this wine. So can you start from the beginning?
Absolutely. So today we're going to talk about a little bit of mystery wine also for us, a very special wine. The wine actually was produced with a vintage 1928. So as it is a wine produced, and we're going into details later on, it is produced from dried grape in a similar way as we produce today Recioto and Amarone. Of course, the vintage was 28, but the food process for Amarone was probably finished in the April-May 1929. The wine was kept aside in our family winery, fining in a special bottle until 44. And in 44, as as it was the last year of war, the ending of the Second World War in Italy and in Europe, it was a very difficult year, a very dangerous year also for Verona. Verona was starting to be bombed. The fighting was coming closer. Okay, and so my grandfather knew that he had to save the jewels of the family, and of course, the most important barrel was this 1928 aging in the winery, in the cellar. So in a night, they went in, okay, they bottled by hand all these bottles, and instead of taking out the bottles, because actually by the time our winery, our chateau was also the place where actually some of the German army actually moved a command. So we were actually also used as a sort of headquarter for some of the German troops that occupied our winery, our chateau back then. So they bottled all these bottles, okay. But instead of taking out the bottles, they directly walled these bottles into the cellar, and they were hidden there because they knew that. Tough times, difficult times, they were coming the last months of the war, that they could actually maybe get in, you know, the winery could have been bombed. Maybe something could have happened. So they wanted to save this wine, so they wore it. And actually, he stayed there. We knew that was there, but he stayed there basically until 1984, 1985. Basically, we as a family, we almost forgot about it. Also, we didn't realize actually there was such an exceptional wine until between 1984 and 1985. We started to drink it, to taste it, and we were amazed. And since then, actually, the wine itself is still going on in an incredible way. Is the finding is still going on. The wine doesn't have any hint of. Really oxidations or bad directions in terms of organoleptic characteristics. So it's perfect. It's really incredible. And it's probably, we were talking about with Arnaud before, and he's going to explain to us later. We think is going to have many, many years ahead still for improving and for developing in a beautiful way.
So, Giovanni, I mean, you know, you're in Burgundy now, and your family has always been very close to Burgundy. They're linked with Burgundy in some way, especially your father. What is exactly the linkage with Burgundy and your family?
So the linkage with Burgundy in my family goes back at least the middle of 1850s. Actually, Verona and Veneto in the first half of the 1800s was still in the under the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. So actually Veneto was not even joined yet with the Italian kingdom, so and Italy was not yet there. So it was a period in which a lot of the families of Verona joined a secret society. Back then they were called the coal merchants, okay, I carbonari, okay. They were using the coal merchants' secret words, okay, so specific secret words to communicate between them, okay, to hide their intentions and to basically work to bring Verona and Veneto to the Italian kingdom and finally unify Italy. So in 1815, what happened? Somebody told my ancestors, so back then they had the same names, my name, so Giovanni Bertani, and my father's name, Gaetano Bertani, the two Bertani brothers back in the 1850s, they told, okay, you should really leave Verona, okay? There is an arrest order for you, they're going to bring you to Austria, okay, you're going to be in trouble. So it's better you leave, it's better you go in exile. So they left Verona. One of the two brothers, Gaetano, stopped in Piemont, that was already part of Italy, of the Italian kingdom. The other one actually moved here, in Bonn, where actually I am today. Okay, of course, okay, I think was not by accident. I think probably, you know, I'm a wine producer. Where should I go for exile? Of course, you know, probably the best option even back then was actually to come to Burgundy, as it is one of the best options that you can choose today. It's one of the most beautiful region, of course. So he decided to move to Burgundy here, and he stayed here about 4 years. And in the 4 year, he really worked, you know, together with some wine producer here. He's experienced the techniques here. He met probably Messi Guyot, okay, you know, and the system connected with the Guyot method. He really studied a lot of innovation that were introduced. They were being introduced in the 1800s. 1800 was very important because, of course, was a time where agriculture, vine growing was meeting science, okay, the scientific knowledge. Winemaking was really driven by innovation and, again, application of a scientific knowledge. So he came back to Verona, finally, when he was allowed to come back to Verona without having any problem. And together with a brother, he basically applied the techniques he experienced in Burgundy to the local varietals. So to the Corvina, Corvinone, Rondinella, Oseletta, Garganaga, all the varietals that we still grow today. So they planted, you know, vineyards at 9,000 vines per hectare, 10,000 vines per hectare, so very high density. They started to produce the first dry wines, so the first modern fermentation, okay? And by the end of the 1800s, okay, they were already exporting to really abroad to many countries, including the United States, Argentina, Brazil. So they were very known, very successful, to a point that they were also supplier to a lot of the royal families of Europe, and they were really, really respected by this innovation. Also, by the time Giovanni Bertani entered the parliament, was elected for 8 years in the parliament, and worked very closely with the minister of agriculture of the time to develop the first regulation about winemaking in the region. So it was very influential to basically spearhead to start the modern Valpolicella and Soave region and Verona winemaking region.
Okay, great. What a fascinating story, and it's incredibly historic and in nature. I'm going to bring Arno's just right next to you, right? So I'd like to bring Arno in. Ciao, Arno.
Ciao. Come stai? Fa piacere.
Che, come stai? I think you're much more Italian than I am. Listen, I know it's Giovanni who's speaking, but it's really Arno. I asked them to put the other phone in another place because there's an echo when you're, you know, the clubhouse, the way it works is that there's an echo. So it's now Arno. Let me just, for those of you who aren't familiar with Arno or Sel, he is, you know, kind of the master of everything and master of none at the same time, because he is, I believe, your official title of the Conferrier des Chevaliers du Testavan. What is it?
It is Intendant Général.
Yeah, I hate that. Intendant Général. How did I do?
Yeah, you do well, very well.
Okay, I'll work on that.
Yeah.
Of course, as you know, there are about 12,000 Chevalier worldwide. So he's manning that entire that confederie. And he's also the director of course, famous, you know, Chateau de Clos de Vougeot. How is
you
that?
Say it perfectly. Okay. Chateau du Clos de Vougeot. Absolutely.
Okay, perfect. Okay. And of course, he organizes Test Vinage. I think you've just done that, right?
Yeah, this was actually late March, yeah.
Yep, and then, but did you didn't do it in person, did you? Or did you?
As a part of the organization, I'm not supposed to taste wine because I put the wine in the good order for the selection. So I'm organizing the thing, but I don't taste.
No, but I mean, did you do it? You know, did you have people coming to?
Yes, we did. We had two sessions actually, but we had to, you know, have just one people per table. Normally we have five people per table, and so we have to you know, respect COVID and stuff like that. So, but we did it, and we tasted blind about 600 wines of Burgundy at this time. And we do it twice a year.
So Arnaud has been to Vinitaly and a couple of times now. He's done master classes of some, you know, selections of the Tespinage awardees at Vinitaly. And he's been incredibly generous doing these classes for us. But today we will be talking about Achinotico with you. First of all, let's try to contextualize a bit. How did you meet the Bertani's family, and how did that happen?
Yeah, you know, before to be a chevalier, a full-time chevalier, and I've been working in the wine industry for the last 20 years, and before to join the Chateau de Claude Rougeot, I was working for a barrel maker called François Frère, which is actually one of the leaders of barrel making all over the world. And I used to have the duty of following all the main Italian wineries and go and visit the best domains and to give some advice on aging. And actually, in the early 2000s, I got to meet Giovanni on a tour that my agent in Italy was organizing with New Kids on the Block, new winemakers, you know, my generation. I was like 23 or 24, and so my agent organized this, and we toured the wineries together with six or seven winemakers from Italy. One of them was Gio, and we get to know each other. And ever since I was coming back to Vinitaly to meet my customers in Verona in the year 2000 to 2010, I got to come and see my friend Giovanni and get to meet his father and his brother and the whole family, Bianca, his mother, we became friends, and I was involved into the selection of the barrels for the Tenuta Santa Maria la Pieve for the Chardonnay. As François Frère is a very famous barrel for both Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And so, I was coming every year. I was coming to Vinitaly, but I also going to visit my friend in Negrar so as to work on the blending of the Chardonnay of the Tenuta Santa Maria alla Pieve. So ever since this time, I was used to come and visit Giovanni and Gaetano and Guillermo and Bianca. And then I even went to some, how do you say that, mountain
refuge.
Refuge together and starting to eat some special Veronese food and as when you're friend, you just share your culture and this is great because of this clubhouse. I mean, we are together again, surrounded by some bottles in my kitchen, and we have a nice preparation of great food that will be ready to go together with a few Amarones. So this is a story of my friendship with Giovanni, and also the way I got to taste this 1928 Achinotico.
And I put a note on this because my father, and he lived in Arnaud again, was opening the Achinotico only for two reasons. One was special events for the winery. So journalists, big events, where are the special occasion and the opening. And he was very jealous about this bottle, so he was preserving them and opening the special occasion. The other side, the other occasion, it was with people he really respected in the wine business. And I think even back then, he was really impressed by Arnaud, okay, about his knowledge, his passion, and also his helping hand in supporting him in the winemaking. So I saw him sometimes meeting people like Arnaud, and from one moment to the other, opening this bottle of 1928 that we only had a special occasions, really, really rare occasion to open, but it was something to share with special people. And I remember one of the few times that this happened with Arnaud visiting my father at a winery.
So I know, yeah. You know, okay, so you've tasted, when was the last time, no, you've tasted the 1928 Acinatico, correct?
Yeah. And
when did you do that?
Okay, so the great thing is that I'm not so much organized, but for moments that are very special, I think I am organized, actually. I don't know, it's crazy, but I have in front of me about six pages, actually, of notes on this tasting that happened on the 1st of April 2007, where I first in my lifetime and first time and not since I've not tasted this wine again, discovered this history about the Acinatico 1928 and tasted the wine together with Giovanni Gaetano and Guillermo and Bianca Bertani. And I, this was so extraordinary that back at the Verona airport, I just wrote down my notes, and I found them back yesterday. I read them back, and I realized that, you know, I had this wine in memory, but when you come back to a wine you've been tasting 15 years ago, which is a long time ago, it was still in my mind. And what I had in mind is the same thing that is written on my notes, which is, you know, this history. And wine is not about what is the cost or where it comes from. It's just about a moment where you open the right bottle in the right moment at the right place. When I know, I have a lot of respect for the Bertani family, and Gaetano was kind of people. You met him many times, but you know, I have a lot of respect for him and what he brings to the Italian wines in general and to the wines of Veneto particularly. You know, we were discussing, we were tasting this Chardonnay from the 2006 vintage, you know, discussing about what should be blended together, what would be the best blend between what type of oak provenance, which toasting, and we finished this. We worked for 2 hours on the blending of the wine of Tenuta Santa Maria alla Pieve, and then he comes to me and say, "Just follow me, please." And so I follow him, and we go. We were in the kitchen, and we go back into this old antique cellar with pilaster. I remember there was some pillars there, and there was this wooden case. And he looks around and tries to find something to open the case, the wooden case, and he opens it, and there is like 12 bottles of this one, and he doesn't say a thing. I just follow him, and he doesn't say a thing. I come back to the kitchen, and starts to open, and then he starts to talk to me about this bottle, which is this 1928 wine. Ricciotto, or I don't know if you can call it Ricciotto. Actually, it's a red wine from Valpolicella, which has been passerier. I don't know if you say that.
Dried grapes.
Dry grapes. And we taste it. And this is, I mean, I've been tasting a few wines during the last 20 years. And this is one of my top 10 wine in my mind, because of its unicity, because of its texture in mouth. It was something very special. So I think we're going to talk afterwards about what was special.
All right, listen, Arno, enough with the foreplay. Can you give Chair with us your tasting notes?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, this is a bit
By the way, Stevie, we need to taste again this wine. So we need to talk about this.
Yes.
Actually, we're now sipping an Amarone 2015 from Tenuta Santa Maria.
Right. Tell us, I'm sure that's great, but tell us can you share with us your tasting notes, six pages? Not the entire... Of course, six pages.
Do we have time for the six pages?
No, because there's a little bit of the story. Back to my notes. I'm just explaining that we were working on the Chardonnays, and we were having 2 hours of discussion, and then so we find this bottle and we open the case, and it takes 2 times to open the cork because the cork breaks and he opens it again, and when he pours the wine, the color is very red, deep red, almost black, and it's it has a texture of a little of kind of a port, you know. You feel it is a heavy wine. I mean, not heavy in the palate, but it has some sugar. And then the nose is rich with spices, honey, a lot of freshness. With I say sous-bois, so I don't know what you say sous-bois, like mushrooms and liver, but still it has this freshness. And then I write it has also a second nose of strawberry, mashed strawberries, very impressive, like a kind of confiture. So everybody remained silent. I have to tell you, Stevie, that on that day, Bianca, the wife of Gaetano, was tasting the wine for the first time. So I was so privileged. I taste the wine in the same time than Gaetano's wife. I mean, it's crazy. On the texture, on the palate, it's very velvety. I find back the fruit with the spices and the honey. I'm stuck on the structure, actually. There is some residual sugar, but it had kept the freshness. And the end of the palate is about caramel. An old rose, and it has a length. It is what struck me. It is a poetic wine with a lot of aromas, the structures, the length. It is like I can't say UFO, but I would say UO. I don't know. I mean, it's an unbelievable wine. That you can't find. It's a wine of a lifetime. There is no wine like this similar. It means that it has been done supposedly with the grapes that you find in the Valpolicella. It has been stuck in there for a while before pressing. The grapes were dried and then pressed. Actually, the wine is around 17.5 degrees with some residual sugar. So it's not Amarone because there is still...
It's almost 18, 7.8.
It's not Amarone, but it's close from the Amarone. I think it is the grandfather of the Amarone. It is and the history also with the fact that they have kept it for 15 years into barrel. It's crazy. I wish Giovanni and his brother go back to produce this type of wine. I mean, the wines they produce are exceptional. And the bottle, actually, you know what, Stevie? I went back to my cellar, and actually, I have the bottle I drank in 2007. I kept it as a souvenir. And it is just in front of me. It has a Porto shape with no label, obviously. It has all the dust of a bottle that has been aged, that has been kept for 80 years. And it looks like it's a dark color bottle. Maybe I will post a photo, a picture of this on my LinkedIn later on tonight, with a few bottles we will be drinking tonight, if people are interested. and these are my notes. This is about complexity, fruit, deepness, and the crazy thing is that this wine is made to age for another century. It is really, you know, it has all the structure, the alcohol, the sugar. So it is a wine for the next generation. And we're talking about something that has been produced 90 years ago, more 92 more, years ago. Yeah, so it's very impressive. And this is what we discover with wine.
Okay, I'm just going to quickly reset the room. This is Italian Wine Club, and today we are talking to Giovanni Bertani and Arnaud Orcel. They're both live from Burgundy. Of this very special wine, 1928 Acinatico, which is the Recciotto, right? Which is the father of Amarone in certain ways. So if you guys have any questions now, I have tons of questions, but if you have any questions from the audience, please raise your hand and I will bring you up. And in the meantime, I will start with Cynthia, who's just been to, I know, Giovanni's winery, the villa, just this week, right? Ciao, Cynthia.
Ciao, Stevie. Ciao, Giovanni. And
Ciao,
yes,
Cynthia.
I was so lucky to be walking in the vineyard in Bertani with Sara at the villa on the day that they were bottling just yesterday. So it's great to have this chat with you tonight. And I'm very happy to be sitting here with a bottle of your Valpolicella Passo that's drinking very well. But I feel seduced by this story, the Acinatico. So I just wanted to ask a question about the difference between the Acinatico from 8 that we can't drink.
Cynthia, you're kind of breaking up. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Better signal.
Can you repeat your question, please?
Yeah, my question is, I'm just so curious about the difference between the 1920 Acinatico and the Recciotto that you make now. I'm happy drinking the Amarone Passo today, but I'm seduced by this story of the Acinatico, and I'd love to know how the Recciotto is being made now.
So, to be fair, Acinatico, this wine is also a little bit of a mystery for us, because the family actually produced only in 1928. They produced some vintages before 1928, but they never produced the same wine after 1928. And we probably think that this was because they decided to do this special, unique reserve in 1928, because probably 1928 was an exceptional vintage, was probably back then the vintage of the century for them. And so it was really a unique occasion. And so they decided to probably do a special harvest, special drying process, maybe partially on the vine, partially as we do today with the Marone on the tables. And then they decided to just forget it for 15 years before bottling. And the bottling was actually a mandatory bottling, was to save it. So in 44, maybe they were planning to age it even more. So what we know about this wine is word of mouth. It's actually some legend into the family passed through the generations, because we don't have actually the actual notes about how it was produced. Even we don't know the exact blend of it. We probably think that this, of course, is a blend of indigenous varietal from Verona, but it's quite a mystery. So one of the mission that me and my brother really to get on with, and if you taste it, it is related to the Recioto, to answer your question, but it's a different wine. It's really another level. It's a different category. Okay, is a different idea behind it. So one of the things we would like to work on for the future, me and my brother, is try to get back and really produce this unique wine again as a way of really dedication to my father.
So Giovanni, listen, I have one question for you. I don't know, for those of you who are interested, I believe it was 2013, I actually ran like 50 lots auction with Zaki's in Hong Kong for their auction. I organized 50 lots for Italian wines, of which, of course, one lot was Acinatico, 3 bottles. And at the time, we had the price was estimated at $7,500 to $12,000. So I know the wines are not for sale, but what is the commercial value today?
It's actually difficult to say. I would say, Arnaud has seen a lot of special vintages here in Bourgogne, so it is not on sale. You cannot buy anywhere at the moment. So, well, what could be the commercial value? I would pass the question to Arnaud.
There's no price for such a wine. When you see, I've seen that. I think it's Christie's that is selling a Petrus 2000 that has been on the moon for 200 days, or not on the moon, but on the International Space Station. So what? I mean, okay, it's. I think what we propose with this is a piece of history, which is, if you look at 1928, it's the start of modern Europe. It is les années folles. It is a lot of things like that. Bottles of this quality are with potential of aging. It is very second to none. So the thing is that if you look, I think I would look at what IGEM is worth from the before the Second World War, and to me this is basically the same class of a great Sauternes from a great vintage. And so I don't know what it's all about. And, I remember I tasted once IGEM 1914, which to me was tough because, you know, 1914, it was made by a woman because all the guys were at war. I recently tasted the 1920, from Claude Duc in Volnay. So this is the type of wine with no price. So if there are people to buy it, great. But I think it is rather... I was so happy to taste the wine without paying it. But I think I would be ready to pay anything and to share it with a few, like a dozen of friends, just to to be able to taste it again. So it's difficult. I mean, you know, about very rare wines, it's about what is the market price, is there people to buy. Obviously, not a lot of people are aware of the existence of such a bottle, but I think it's an icon of Italy history, Italian wine history. And so if you look at the bottle, there's almost 100 years of history. There is a history of this family that has been one of the entrepreneur of the wine of Italy. I mean, not only in Veneto, but I mean, when you think about the fact that the Bertani family was using Guyot pruning in the 19th century, there's everything in this bottle, there's all this history. So I don't know when there would be some of those bottles on the market. I don't know who have been buying in the past. I know there was some auction in, I think, Hong Kong and maybe New York in the past.
Hong Kong.
And so some people are interested in this, but this is one of the, you know, I did not keep a lot of bottles, empty bottles in my cellar. I like full bottles in my cellar, but I did not keep a lot of empty bottles. And this is the one I have. And when I keep a bottle, usually I put my tasting notes inside the bottle, so as to be able to find them back. And I wrote, and I mean, these are the longest tasting notes I've ever written. I tell you, this is really 6 pages. I have them in front of me.
I have to say myself, I was impressed because, Stevie, you asked us maybe 10 days ago to organize this. I was totally amazed.
Yeah, I gave you guys a long time. Usually I ask just a couple of days before, so just be thankful.
Exactly. We had full time. But Arnaud actually had everything actually of that day. Had the bottle, had the notes. Okay, we are missing the wine because, of course, that was actually tasted that day. But he kept everything. It was amazing. It was, and of course, it was a little bit emotional for me also to think back to my father. By the way, to underline also the period in which it was produced. That was the time when slowly, as a family, we started to ferment more the Recioto into drier wines. So it took from the 1920s, so from the time that this wine was produced back then, to the 1958, so about exactly 30 years, to slowly develop what we know as today as the Amarone process. So we started from a sweet wine, the Recioto, okay, and they started to develop these multiple fermentations. So even this wine was probably fermented several times before the bottling, and this process ended up to the modern Amarone that we know today. So for us, is like the landmark in the family. Is beside being a beautiful wine, because there's actually is the starting point of a process that ended up to generate the Amarone of today. So it is also very important for this reason for us.
To me, this is the oldest wine from the Veneto region that you can find. I'm not sure about, you know, the viticulture in Italy is taking is a landmark. I mean, obviously, there is a long, long history, but this is a modern wine. This is what the pioneer of the renewal of Italian wines have been produced, and it is the father of many great labels in Italy. So it's just very emotional to talk about the wine and to be in front of my friend Giovanni to discuss this. Thank you for creating this.
Listen, I'm really jealous that you guys are both in Burgundy. right now. I would be remiss if we didn't talk about also the problems that the weather conditions in Burgundy. I wonder, Arno, if you can just briefly talk about that, if you can give us an update.
I was in the Chateau du Claude Vougeot today, and you see that the birds have gone through after the big frost. We are very late towards last year, more than 2 weeks late. I mean, last year was quite early year, but we don't know yet if there is a potential harvest. We don't know, you know, since we don't see the grapes. So for the moment, it's a bit stressful for us, but for that reason, we are drinking a few wines. We have on the table a few great vintages. I have with me Moulin Avant from 1962. I have Amarone della Valpolicella from Quintarelli 2009. Amarone Tenuta Santa Maria 2015. And the Gervais Chambertin 2018.
So, Stevie, it's just 8 hours if you drive now.
The two of you?
I'm very sorry, Stevie.
All right. Listen, I'm going to just let the people know that we are about 10 minutes left to this room. I'm going to close up this room in 10 minutes. So this will be kind of your last chance to raise your hand if you have any questions for Giovanni or Arno. In the meantime, I bought Leica up. Leica has been working with me. Of course, Lan is coming up too. Has been working with me on backstage. And I just want to remind everyone, this is the Italian Wine Club. This is our weekly room. And if you'd like to be updated about the next room schedule, please do follow us. You can do this by tapping on the greenhouse thingy up there, or alternatively tap on the two avatars with the wine glasses on my profile in the bottom left-hand corner, and that should lead you to the clubs. So please do that if you can to have, you know, more information and to learn about Italian wines. We have a big Italian Veneto International Academy ambassadors community here, and I'm very, very happy about that. Let me just give a quick shout out to some of those, like Jody, Andrea, Stefan, they're all in the same row, Sheila, Jacopo, of course, Valeria, Paul, and others. So, Leica, ciao, Leica.
Ciao. I have a question for Giovanni.
Great.
Well, my question is, since you've mentioned the market value of Acinatico 1928, how many bottles are remaining right now? And are you still gonna put it on auction?
Well, first of all, we have no rush to sell it. And my father actually was thinking maybe there was still time to age it. So we were releasing really, actually one of the few occasions was actually with Stevie and with the Hong Kong Zaki's event. So currently it's not on sale, and we're looking for in the future to find the correct partner to manage this special reserve in a correct way.
And sorry, Giovanni, to interrupt you. If I shall say something, I think we shall wait another 6 or 7 years. So that to wait for the century of this wine, I would urge Giovanni and his family to organize a special tasting open to a certain type of public of this one. You don't need to taste, you don't need 15 centiliters of this wine to taste it. Maybe you only need 3 or 4 centiliters. So what I would like Giovanni to think about is in 2028, organized at the beautiful Villa Mosconi Bertani, a kind of tasting of Holly's wine, including at the end via Chinatico 1928, maybe only 3 centiliters. Maybe it will cost a few hundred euros to taste this wine. I tasted once. Last year, I tasted a 1920 on the very day it has been harvested a century before. And I think this is the beauty of the wine. We drink history. We drink family. We drink all this. And what I would imagine with this wine, if I was into marketing, if I was into imagining a nice way to present the wine, is to open like a dozen of bottles in 2028 and to give the possibility of, you know, you guys that are listening for 1 hour now, and I urge maybe Stevie to take the name of all these guys that have been listening to us, so that they get the possibility to taste this wine in 7 years. I mean, there's no rush.
Yeah.
And open this bottle like in September or October 2028 when it has been harvested. So that, you know, to taste a wine which is 100 years old. So
by the way, we waited 93 years, so why should we wait seven more?
You know, I once bought a bottle and I waited 9 years before to drink it. It's easy. You just have it in mind and you wait for it. And I think this is the same for the for this beautiful Achinatico. And I was saying Achinatico is fascinatico. It's fascinating. I don't know if it's the same root of the word, like fascination, Achinatico. It looks the same to me, and I'm ready to wait another 7 years to taste it again. So this is my idea, and I hope all of you, I see you guys like Paul, Helen, Romina, Lance, Anita, Guylaine, Anna, Scott, Spin, Valeria, Stefan, Laura, Stefano, Amalisa, Kevin, Sonia, and I can't read Russian. But all these people, I hope we can all meet together in 2028 at Villa Mosconi Bertani to taste this wine.
Well, that is the earliest notice of save the date, if I ever heard one. And by the way, we have another chat for the Via community, and I think Valeria, all those people you mentioned, Paul, and also Paul was the first one, Cynthia, and everybody saying they and Stefan, they're in. So you have few guests already for 2028, buddy. Okay, great idea.
Fantastic.
Okay. All right. We have actually 3 more minutes, but I'm going to let Lan and Jacopo ask the questions, and then you can answer together. Lan, hi, Lan. What's your question, buddy?
Ciao, Stevie. Ciao, Giovanni. Ciao, Arnold.
Hello, Lan.
I think before I ask a question, I would like to share a few numbers because I did my own research too. And it is said that 7,500 Achinatico were digged out from the wall when it was discovered in 1984 or 1985. Then, just to give you all an idea, the wine has been auctioned a few times, and the price is normally around 2,000 euros. So, after knowing this, then, like, I know, of course, Giovanni, you can correct me if I'm wrong. My question is pretty straightforward. What does Achinatico mean? Do you have plan to maybe produce some wine, use Achinatico as a label in the future?
So first of all, Achinatico actually is really goes back to the Roman time, where the what used to be the Ricciotto back then was the sweet wine from Verona was called Achinaticum. So really it refers to
to the 2000 years ago. So Verona was already famous for these beautiful wines produced from dried grape. So when they produced it in 1928, when they produced this special vintage, and then they bought in 44, they want to reference this special vintage to the origin even of Verona's tradition of producing wines from dried grapes. So the names goes back, and of course Acino, so probably, I don't know if it's fascination or Acino, but we don't know exactly how actually this name came by, but we know that, for example, of course, Acino is the single fruit in Italian of the grape, so maybe it's connected with that, but it used to be the original Latin name for Recioto, so the original name for the Recioto back during the Roman time. And of course, as you know, even Valpolicella is probably dates back as origin of the Valley of the Many Cellars, Valpolicelle. Okay, so there is a lot of still a lot of influence of those early production back in the Roman time in our region.
Okay, great. Listen, so before we take the last questions from Jacopo, just as a friendly reminder that next week we will be back with the Three Musketeers, Gabriele Gorelli, the new master of wine from Italy, the only master of wine from Italy, with his study buddies, Pietro Russo and Andrea Lonardi. And we'll be talking about natural wines from Italy, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that is next week, the same time. You know, that's what I do, right? I make titles for these rooms. Okay. And that's next week, same time, 8 p.m. Central European time. Ciao, Jacopo. What is your question?
Hi, Stevie. Hi, Giovanni. Hi, Arno. I have a question. I have a more technical question. So which is the main difference, in your opinion, Giovanni, from Old Acinatico and Modern Recioto? And do you think Modern Recioto can age in the same way and have the same evolution of your 1928 Acinatico?
So is the most difficult question because we don't know exactly, how actually this wine was produced. But we know the product of the process, and so the wine itself. And personally, I don't know any other Recioto that actually has the same character of this. So it would be difficult to me as far as the Recioto I tasted, the modern Recioto that I tasted so far, to have something having the same characteristic almost 100 years later, like this wine. So to begin with, I think probably the blend was slightly different. The harvest, the vinification process was probably quite different. But again, it's a little bit of mystery even with us. So it's,
Giovanni, sorry to interrupt you, but yeah. Would you consider doing Acinatico 2028? And would you try to do the same wine and age it for 15 years in the wood?
So
for your great grandsons.
So my feeling is that probably my grandfather actually, when he came here, somebody asked a similar question in 1854 or something. Okay, from Burgundy. So maybe could be the next challenge. I would say. I would like to do this.
Let's absolutely discuss about this and plan.
I would totally try. Would like love to do this, and I'm totally on it. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Listen, thank you so much, Giovanni and Arno. I'm really jealous. I'm not there with you guys. Can you tell me what you've cooked? Is it like pheasant or something? That's what you cooked last time.
Okay, actually, this week we're celebrating the death of Napoleon.
Wow.
That passed away exactly 200 years ago on the 5th of May. So I decided to go to cook on a poulet marengo. You know, marengo was a battle that Napoleon won. and his chef, his cook, prepared a pollo with what he found in Marengo. So there is some tomatoes, there is some white wine, and it's been cooking for the last 3 hours. So it should be not too bad. And
so that is quite.
But Arno, listen, I think that's what you cooked for me last time.
No, is that not
the only dish? Is that the only dish you know how to cook? All right, listen, you guys have a great time. Thank you so much, and rest
thank
in
you
peace,
Stevie.
Gaetano. Until next time, ciao, Giovanni. Arno.
Ciao, ciao. Bye, bye, everybody. Ciao.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.